USA, episode number 18. I'm your host, Tom Harris, in Chicago, Illinois, another hot, sticky Chicago summer evening. And that was a little bit of Dollar Mandy there to open up the show. I'm not going to use his music all the time to open the show. I don't have the rights to it. I freely admit that. But that little snippet is posted for review purposes, in case any legalese-type people are out there. I don't intend to use it on future episodes, but I do enjoy the song, and that little snippet is from Dalla Mandy's big hit, Tunak Tunak Tung, as is very familiar to who hang out on YouTube, and also to people who play World of Warcraft. The dance that Mandy does in the video for that song is one of the dances that the video game characters do in the game. So it's a lot of fun, and I love the song. I like a lot of his stuff, actually. And I do have fondness for this sort of Bhangra dance music, and it's hard to find a good station online that plays it. There's always a little bit too much of the, I don't know, the other type of Hindi dance music, which I don't really care for. And the reason I don't care for it, I think, is just because it's too much like every other bit of dance music out there. It all kind of sounds just like Western dance music, and that's not really what I want. So, attentive listeners may have noticed I was on the Ross Patzelt radio show this morning, and as I record this, it was this morning, Monday morning, and admittedly, this show will probably not be posted until Thursday. I probably won't even finish it today, being Monday. Normally, I wouldn't draw attention to that. It's interesting because it was Ross's Spanish special, and he was going to be talking about his holiday in Spain, which he and his lovely girlfriend, Donna Carter of DonnaCarter.com, have just got back from. I guess they were in Spain for a couple of weeks, and Irving Distiller filled in for one of those weeks on the show. But this morning, Irving and I were on his show, and sort of he was trying to tell the story, and we kept interrupting. So he never really did get to finish it. But one thing that really struck me, now I haven't done any shows so far on travel, but it is one of the tags that this show has when I put it up places, and it is a subject that I have always intended to talk about. And Ross has now given me an excuse to talk a little bit about travel. And for those who are sort of aware, I worked in the travel business for about 6 years, and I worked for an outfit called The Savvy Traveler. It's still available, so that's www.thesavvytraveler.com. They're an online travel bookstore, primarily books and maps and things. But at one point, they had a retail operation in downtown Chicago, and I worked there for 6 years. One of the things that struck me when Ross was talking about his holiday was that he sort of expected people to kind of take the piss out of him because he went on a package holiday, you know, all inclusive. And I don't know why he would expect that. I guess it's not a real popular way to travel in my circle of friends. But there really isn't anything wrong with it. I mean, usually the way these things work is you pay a flat rate and you get all of your hotel and your meals and your airfare and your bus fare and all these things are included in just kind of this one lump price. it's a very convenient way to travel if you don't want to be bothered to make any kind of arrangements yourself. Now, I know that there are a lot of people out there who are more the type to, they're more the type to plan their own vacation. They don't want to leave these things to chance, and they're a little bit more independent in the way that they plan their trips. You know, there's nothing wrong with an all-inclusive if that's the way you want to travel. And really, the bottom line is, and I hope that Ross is listening to the show and he hears this, you know, Ross, you shouldn't take it from people if they want to make fun of you for doing an all-inclusive holiday. Because really, the bottom line, the only thing that matters when it comes to going on vacation is that you have fun. And if going on a trip to Spain like that, you know, that's all inclusive, is fun and you have a good time on it, who cares what people think? Really, who cares what people think? Now, I wouldn't choose that way to do a trip myself, but that doesn't mean that it's not a good way to do it for other people. When I was working in the travel business, we had a lot of people who would do these package holidays, all-inclusive sort of thing. And they would go to places like Cinque Terre or Tuscany or the south of France. And it sounds like they all had a great time. I tend to be more interested in backpacking and doing sort of the independent thing and going from town to town. And that's the way I've done a lot of my traveling, is this sort of planned. And there have been times when I've done a more leisurely trip where I've been able to kind of stick around a while in certain places, like, you know, spending a week in Rome or a week in Paris. I spent 2 weeks in Paris in 96, kind of separate times, but kind of passing through, and I just kind of, you know, that was the sort of trip it was. It was a little bit more leisurely than a two-week holiday. And, you know, I have another trip coming up here at the end of August. And that's going to be kind of a leisurely thing, too, because we're only going to the north of England and maybe out to the Isle of Islay, because I want to go visit the whiskey distillery where I own a square foot of Scotland. whether or not my best friend will want to go out there, I don't know. But I love Scotland, so it's one of those places. But I started traveling fairly early, and I started, my first trip to Europe was in 1980, and that was pretty much the equivalent of an all-inclusive package. I actually went with a group of about 50 other people, and it was a group from my general area school district. They weren't all from my high school, but they were from high schools around the area where I went to school. And I had just graduated. I was 17 years old, and it was my first time out of the country, period. I hadn't even been to Canada at that point. It was definitely an eye-opening experience, and I am all about travel, and I think especially when you're young, because it really opens your eyes to other cultures and you get a taste of what other places are really like. So often in this country, in America, and maybe this is true for England or some other countries as well, you tend to think of yourselves as set apart and superior, and everything is so much better at home than it is when you go away. And the experiences that I've had while traveling, I really haven't had that sense at all. And it's a good way of kind of getting rid of the sort of xenophobia and, you know, fear of foreigners and fear of foreign cultures and things like that. As long as you travel in a way that you actually get a taste of the local culture. If there's one thing that I think is bad about something like an all-inclusive holiday, it would be that you really don't experience the local culture. You might have some local entertainment, but you're not actually experiencing any kind of immersion. you tend to be kind of in a bubble with other people who are like you, people who are on a package holiday. And my best friend was telling me about these resorts that exist in the Canary Islands off the coast of Africa that are frequented by Finnish tourists. Now, my best friend lives in Finland, and he married a Finnish girl, and they live in Finland now. And they've been there for about 21 years now. And he was saying, these Finnish resorts on the Canary Islands where Finnish people go to visit with Finnish people, eat Finnish food, and have Finnish entertainment. And my thought in that deal was, why bother? You know, you're going to the Canary Islands. Why don't you actually try to experience something of the culture? And so, but that's not what they want. I mean, the Finns are somewhat xenophobic, so it makes sense, I guess, culturally, that they would do that. Now, I've also met Finnish people, and I've been traveling around Europe, and they haven't been like that, of course. So that's it's an overgeneralization, perhaps, but life is full of these little overgeneralizations. But every trip I've been on since that first little jaunt in 1980. Has been more independent. And my next trip was in 88, and it was a 2-week trip. It was a pretty short trip, and I went there for Paul, my best friend's wedding. So I had to make my way from London, because that was the cheapest place to fly in at that point, make my way from London to southern Finland and back all the way to London in 2 weeks, and then kind of write at the end of that was the wedding. So I traveled in a fairly leisurely pace through the south of England, the Netherlands, a little bit of Belgium, and up through Denmark and Sweden up, and then took a ferry across to Finland. And then I spent a 48-hour mad dash getting back from Finland to London, and it was really kind of a series of all-night trains, and had a 48-hour trip to Ostend in Belgium, and then took the ferry over to Dover, where I got on a train to get over to London again. And boy, was that a pain in the butt. it was just awful. My next time there was in 94, and that was a little bit more straightforward. Fly in, spend a week there, fly out. That was just sort of a brief vacation where Paul and I went hiking above the Arctic Circle. Actually, it was not above the Arctic Circle, now that I think about it. It was kind of below the Arctic Circle, just barely kind of below the Arctic Circle, a famous hiking trail called the Karhunkeros, the Bear's Ring, and it's about a 50-mile, 75-kilometer trail that we took about 5 days to do it, and it was good fun. It was, that was the whole reason for going up there, and I still do have some pictures somewhere of that. And then after that, I decided I really, really wanted to go and spend a good long holiday in Europe and really, really somewhat thoroughly explore the entire continent, or pretty much the entire continent. And at that point, I was at this transitional period in my life when I decided, okay, well, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to take some time off, a good amount of time, a year or more, and go traveling. And then when I come back, I'm going to go back to school and just kind of get a fresh start over again. And I didn't end up taking as much time off as I thought. I ended up taking about 8 months off. But I did this 8-month trip through Europe. And the first 3 months I was in Northern Europe. And then I spent a couple of months, almost 3 months, in the British Isles. And then I spent the last 2 months, or the last 3 months, 2 months, I guess, in Southern Europe, so Spain, Italy, and so forth. It was planned so that I started the trip in the summertime, and it ended in January. And the reason why I did it, of course, is because I wouldn't have to carry a heavy coat. I would be in Southern Europe in December, and so I wouldn't have to worry so much about having any really warm clothing. So that was a really, really eye-opening experience. And I have to say that 1996 trip was really a life-changing moment. And it is a prime example of, you know, this. I had a total immersion in what it meant to be in Europe. Now, I was always there, though, as an outsider. Not as a tourist. I'm not gonna say that, but as a traveler, you always kind of feel like you're outside of it. You're not really part of it. And I did meet people. I did talk to a lot of people and make friends. Yeah, the way you do on the road, you know, because it always happens, you know, when you're traveling, and especially if you're traveling alone and you're traveling, you know, for a long period of time. You do end up making connections, but they're not lasting connections. And everybody knows that they're not lasting connections, you know, everybody involved. So you travel with somebody for a week, or you travel with somebody for a few days. There was a guy named Leonard who I traveled with in Luxembourg. We, you know, didn't really know each other, just at the hostel that I was staying at. He was there, and he said, "Yeah, do you want to go sightseeing together?" And I said, "Sure," you know. And that was the extent of it. We We saw the sights together in Luxembourg for a couple of days, and then that was it. You know, it was like, "Oh, yo, cheers," you know, "go have fun," you know, and that was it. And you make a lot of these little connections, but most of them don't really come to anything. So, you know, in a way, it's sort of interesting because you're still kind of on the outside, but you're not completely alone because there's always other travelers. And a lot of people, especially from, you know, Australia and New Zealand, who are, you know, it takes so long for them to get from Australia and New Zealand to Europe. So when they go there, they want to go for a long time. And a lot of them, you know, go for like 3 years, and they, you know, they work in a hostel, and they, you know, they see all of Europe and sort of over a period of years before they go back to Australia or New Zealand. And it would be nice to be young again so that I could do something like that and be Australian or from New Zealand, because you can get work permits a lot easier because as a member of the British Commonwealth, it makes it easier for you to find that sort of employment. It's a lot harder for an American. I've heard that it's been done, but I never really had any success myself. I did some, don't tell anybody, under the table work at a hostel in London, where I did some cleaning for them, and in return I got a free bed. And that was great when I was spending 2 weeks in London, because I would spend, 7 o'clock in the morning, I would go down and help them make the toast and the tea, you know, sort of the breakfast that they had. And then after breakfast was over, checkout time was, I think, 10 a.m. there. It was pretty early for a hostel. And would vacuum the rooms and do whatever little tasks they had to do. And then I'd have the rest of the day to sightsee. I was always done before noon. And I had the whole rest of the day to do whatever I wanted to in London. And London, of course, is one of my absolute favorite places on the planet. So I never run out of things to do there. Even now, I've been to London so many times now and seen it so many times, and I've seen all the major sites. I really don't need to see them again. I usually catch Westminster Abbey, and I usually catch the Tower of London while I'm there, more out of a sense of tradition than anything else. But I kind of think I got off the subject a bit. But like I was saying, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, if you're taking an inclusive holiday or a tour or whatever. The one thing I don't like about the tour, and when I was on my first trip, this was always a factor, is that you always get rushed through things. We went to the Vatican, and we were just kind of hurried through as a group. We really didn't have a chance to explore. And I was reminded on the other week when I was listening to Chris Reardon's show, and he was talking about his trip to the Vatican. I was remembering my trip to the Vatican in 96 because I was in Rome for a week, a whole week, and maybe about 10 days I was in Rome before I went south to through Naples and down to Sicily. During that trip, and it kind of started, you know, a couple months before, when I was traveling through Germany, I had offered a seat on the next seat next to me on the train to this very tired looking young man who, frankly, I kind of thought he was cute. I was kind of hoping to chat him up. But he turned out that he worked for the Vatican newspaper. And we kind of chatted for this, you know, 5 hour trip or so that it took us to get to where he got off the train in Germany. At the end of the trip, he said, "Well, you know, I live in Rome. So if you're coming to Rome, you know, call me and you can crash on the couch in the living room." And I said, that sounded great. You know, free place to stay in Rome. Excellent. I'm, you know, call me that. And of course, you know, I didn't think he was an axe murderer. Yeah, I can't imagine doing that in Chicago. You know, all of a sudden, this is some stranger offering, "Oh yeah, come stay with me." But no, he seemed like a very harmless person. I think I'm a pretty good judge of character. And so anyway, when I got to Rome, I called the guy. I don't think he ever expected to hear from me again. But I did call him, and he said, "Oh, yeah, come over. Yeah, stay on the couch." And I ended up sleeping on like a little futon kind of thing in his apartment. And he shared his apartment with the like an Italian heavy metal band and an 80-year-old lady. It was very, very interesting. And interesting not in an awkward way. Because I would wake up in the morning and there'd be strange people sitting around, you know, chain-smoking Italian cigarettes and kind of staring at me, wondering who I was. But what was I getting to? Oh, and that was the time we actually... he was singing at in St. Peter's Basilica, and he was in one of the choirs that sings there, and he said, "Well, you know, come with me to the Basilica tomorrow and hear me sing it." So yeah, okay, that sounds fine. And I figured if I got bored during the Mass, I could just kind of wander around. We were running late, so he decided to take a taxi, and everything they say about Italian taxis is true. This guy actually drove on the sidewalk to avoid having to stop at a red light because we were running late, and the guy, you know, we were already running late, and the guy decided, "Oh, I've got to stop for gas," which was the most annoying thing. And he got his gas, and then we left, and he was just double timing it from, you know, from where we were in the sort of the northern part of Rome to St. Peter's. And then we got to go into St. Peter's via the back entrance, which I didn't even know that there was a back entrance. And it looks very, very nondescript. The buildings aren't anything special. They're kind of more modern. We walk through these hallways that look like, you know, the sub-basement of a school or something. They get very kind of ordinary industrial type hallway, and you open the door and you're in St. Peter's. And I guess that these were the passageways that the choirs use all the time and the priests use all the time. And you don't imagine that this Renaissance masterpiece of a building designed by Michelangelo will have these sort of dingy, poorly lit industrial hallways, and you get to go into the back door into the Vatican. It was kind of one of those stories that I love to tell because it's not something that everybody gets to experience. And that's the sort of thing I think that you don't really experience when you're on a package holiday. So I would definitely recommend to people that when you travel, take it upon yourself to try things that aren't the ordinary thing. I mean, you can go to a pub and drink anywhere at home. You can do that in Chicago. I could go to an Irish pub right now and order a pint. You know, it's not something that I look forward to doing on a holiday because it's something that I can do every day here. So I really say, you know, whatever works for you works for you. But I think that holidays are a lot more enjoyable when you get to actually experience some of the local culture. Now, granted, I don't have a lot of experience traveling in like a third world environment. I think the one exception to that was some of the places that we went, or that I went, when I was in Eastern Europe. And I'm thinking mainly of some of the dodgier areas of Prague, or the city of Brno, which is in Moravia, sort of southeast of Prague. That's kind of an area that I walked through. It's probably the one time in all of Europe, all the traveling I've done, when I've actually kind of not felt safe. It was sort of like walking through some of the, like Cabrini Green or something in Chicago. You know that there are people there. You don't see anybody, but you know they're there, and you know that they're watching you. And so as a result of that, you kind of watch, you know, if there's anyone following you, etc. But I'm happy to say, you know, most of my travels in Europe have been a lot more. I've never felt unsafe, because you know, in general, Chicago is, you know, about a lot more dangerous than any place I've ever been in Europe. A lot more people get killed here and mugged here than get killed or mugged in London or Paris. So, I mean, there's an advantage to living in a high crime area, I suppose, especially in my neighborhood, where you know, people are kind of dealing crack openly on the streets. And I kind of understand that people are alarmed about coming here. But I think it's worth it to make the effort to kind of reach out and experience some of the culture. And that is not a swipe. You know, I'm not kind of taking the piss out of anybody who chooses to do a tour. Because the tours are good for one thing. They get you to see the stuff that you really want to see. And you usually can plan your tour around, say, the art galleries of Paris, or the basilicas of Rome, or the necropolises in you know, the Czech Republic. You can kind of tailor your trip to your interests, as opposed to just kind of wandering around aimlessly, which is what I was doing in Europe. Anyway, just a few thoughts on travel. And it's a subject that I'll probably be coming back to in future episodes. As time goes on, I'll maybe talk. I was thinking about doing a show on my trip to Japan, which I took in 2002. When I do my trip to England in August, I'll probably end up doing a show just about that. So I think, oh my gosh, the time. I do think that I'm going to wrap it up here. I do have a lot more to say on travel if people want to hear it. If you want to hear anything in particular, if you want more detail, if there's any subjects that you'd like me to cover, travel advice, if you're thinking about going to Europe for the first time and you don't know what to do, feel free to contact me. I'd be happy to talk about that on the show. I did it for 6 years professionally. So, you know, don't think that it's sort of inexperienced sort of advice. But if you have any thoughts, comments, questions, etc., very easy to get a hold of me. You can email the show at harrispodcast@gmail.com. You can also drop me a line at tom@tomharrisusa.com. Or if you're listening on Podbean, you can just kind of clicky the link to comment. I am now available on iTunes. I just signed up and got the show on iTunes, and you can now download it on iTunes and whatever. I don't recommend trying to reach me through that. I would say, you know, just writing to the email address is going to be the most efficient way to get a hold of me. Anyway, shout outs to Ross and to Irving and Yannick, who appeared on the show with me this morning. Always a pleasure, gentlemen, to waste Ross's time with you. And from Tom Harris at Tom Harris USA, signing off. See you next time. Cheers.